Good afternoon, and welcome to a WFPL news special on rising college tuition. I'm Gabe Bullard. In the Louisville area, tens of thousands of people are classified as having some education, meaning they've dropped out of college for various reasons. One of the key factors for many students is the inability to pay for school. Students don't realize how much an education costs, or they take on jobs or struggle to manage all their responsibilities and end up leaving school. Research for the city's 55,000 degrees program shows that cost is a top barrier, literally and psychologically, for people who are thinking about returning to college or enrolling for the first time. And now, as we heard, costs are going up once again. The Council for Postsecondary Education has capped tuition increases for the University of Louisville and University of Kentucky at 6%. Other public universities can raise tuition as much as 5%, and community colleges can raise tuition 4%. With me today to discuss this topic are University of Louisville President James Ramsey, Jefferson Community and Technical College President Tony Newberry, and Kentuckiana Works Executive Director Michael Gritton. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you, Gabe.
And we also want to hear from you. How did you pay for college? Is tuition too high for you? Call 502-814-8255. That's 502-814-TALK. Email news at WFPL.org or find us on Facebook or tweet at WFPL News. We'll start with you, Dr. Ramsey. U of L is planning a 6% tuition increase, correct?
Yes, that's right, Gabe.
And why is that necessary?
Well, it's necessary to keep us moving forward and meet our statutory mandate. It's in the law that the University of Louisville, the law of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, that we be a premier nationally recognized metropolitan research university. To achieve those goals and to achieve that mandate is very expensive. We've been through 11 budget cuts in 11 years, so the state has said, here's what we want you to do, but, oh, by the way, we're not going to be able to fund you at the level that you need to be funded to achieve that mandate. So we're doing a lot of things to manage costs. We're trying to raise other forms of revenue from our clinical practices at the medical school and so forth. But at the end of the day, a lot of that burden has been shifted from the general taxpayer of the Commonwealth of Kentucky to the students, to the ultimate consumer.
With those 11 years of cuts, have there been 11 years of tuition increases as well?
No question. There's been a big shift in this state from the state taxpayer to the student. None of us, as we said at our tuition forum earlier in the spring, we don't take any joy in increasing prices. None of us like increased prices. None of us like gasoline prices when they go up. It's a fact of life, but the reality is if we're to continue to move forward and do the research and be able to provide the quality education that's expected of us, we've got to cover the cost, and tuition is one of those ways that we use in addition to a number of other strategies.
So what does that bring tuition to? Without scholarships or grants, what would an undergraduate pay for a year tuition?
Next year, they'll be paying a little bit over $9,000 per year for their tuition. Now, that is the sticker price. And I think that a lot of times the press in particular gets fixated on sticker price. But it's like going to an automobile lot. There's the sticker price on the window. And more often than not, very few of us really pay that sticker price. So there's a lot of discounts. The federal government has a number of financial aid programs for higher education. We're very fortunate in Kentucky to have not only a strong merit-based financial aid program in the Keys program, but also a strong need-based program, the CAP program, CAP grant program. And then I think all of our institutions have institutional-based aid. So at the University of Louisville, probably no more than a quarter of our students actually pay the full tuition. And actually, it's and higher education is an interesting pricing model. You really do price to the student who can afford it, and then provide discounts to all the students that cannot afford it.
Have those discounts, the university scholarships, the federal aid, have those gone up in line with tuition?
It's hard to say that they've gone up in lockstep. There have been periods where the Pell Grant has increased. Sometimes not quite as much as the tuition increases. What we've tried to do at the University of Louisville, though, from an institutional aid perspective, is increase the institutional aid at the same rate that we increase tuition.
Has that happened?
Yes.
Okay. And if you could have, would you have planned for more than 6% of a tuition increase this year?
Well, I don't know, Gabe. We have processes. One of the beauties of the Academy is that we believe very much in shared governance. And so we have a tuition setting group, task force. It's made up of faculty, staff, and students. And they look at all the data that they can look at. They look at tuition in other states. They look at our peer institutions, our competitive, our competitor institutions. They look at income statistics of our college-going base at the University of Louisville. They look at a lot of factors and then make a recommendation to us. And the recommendation essentially that was made to us was a 6% increase before the council officially set that cap at 6%.
But you could always, I mean, this is characteristic of universities and probably any organization at this point, you could use the extra money, though. There are things that
absolutely
money could be spent on that would meet your goals.
Yeah, absolutely. The last 3 years have been difficult for all of us. The budget cuts have been a little bit more intense. We've not been able to give recurring salary increases for 3 years. We've not been able to add new research faculty that we need to add to be a nationally recognized research university. So with the 6% salary increase, we will be adding 12 new faculty lines. We'll be adding additional need-based and merit-based financial aid for our students. So we could always use more money. We are trying to generate additional revenue streams from other sources. And again, I mentioned the example of our clinical income. We're trying to develop non-performing assets. Michael was mentioning before we came on the air our development at the Shelby campus. We're trying to take a piece of property that has been, in all candor, underperforming, not generating income. It's been a cost center. And we're trying to take that and generate income to come back and support our teaching and research mission. And all of us, every one of us, have to do what everyone else does, and that's manage our cost. And so we're implementing a number of energy savings programs and retrofitting all of our buildings and so forth. On the other hand, we're doing some very small things like washing windows every other year instead of every year.
But at the end of the day, tuition will go up, and it needs to go up for you to continue to finance things, pay for the right teachers, have buildings that are up to date. But are the students the right place to go for this? Are you worried about tuition getting too high?
Sure. You always worry about the elasticity of demand, whatever business you're in. But right now, Gabe, in all candor, our applications continue to be strong. Our enrollment has not dropped. In principles of economics, we teach the law of demand. As price goes up, quantity demand, it goes down. We've not really seen that at the University of Louisville. And I think, very candidly, that most of our students in the state realize that higher education is an investment good. It's an investment. They're making that expenditure is an investment in their future. And I think when you look at it as an investment, the rate of return on investment, it's a very different decision-making process than if I go out and buy consumer goods, something that I'm consuming. So I do think that many people realize that distinction and realize it's the best investment that they can make.
And on that topic, we talked to a University of Louisville student about this. Let's hear that.
My name is Daryl Young. I'm a student, senior at the University of Louisville, majoring in secondary education, minoring in Pan-African Studies. I'll be going into my fifth year, graduating in May 2012, and there's been a tuition increase every year that I've been at the University of Louisville. Students really are hurting, and we're not seeing our scholarships being raised as high as the tuition increases. So a lot of students are worried. They're worried how they're going to stay in school. Do they have to get another job? Can they focus with a job and school? One of the things I've seen a lot of students do, a lot of students are going to JCC. I think students are having to face harsh realities that they wouldn't have to maybe 5 or 6 years ago when they were just, you know, going to college and knew that this degree would give them a job instantaneously. But now they have to wonder, well, I might not have a job my first year out of college, but I'll have my bills to pay when I get out of college that first year. So it's creating worries that I don't think students had maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but now they have to with the struggling economy, lack of workforce, lack of jobs. They have to think, well, I'm creating debt. Where can I get employed to pay off this debt? And I think that's a huge burden and a psychological factor that a lot of students are having to face. But I will say that students of color, whether they be black, Hispanic, Asian, Indian, what have you. I think a lot of those students are feeling the burden more than their counterparts. Not just along lines of race, but you have to issue age. You're more non-traditional students who are probably working a job and trying to go to school and probably supporting a family because they're older. They're not expecting their tuition to go that high because they have other obligations, so they can't just merely focus on paying tuition. They have kids, they have a house, they have a car note, things that traditional college student might not have.
That was University of Louisville senior Daryl Young. He's graduating this year, I believe. Dr. Newberry, we just heard him say that some of his classmates are turning to Jefferson Community and Technical College for a lower-cost alternative to a four-year university. The president of the United States, Barack Obama, recently had a community college summit, and he's called, I believe his quote was, that community colleges are the unsung heroes of American education. JCTC is planning to grow. Is that a result of more students coming?
That's right. JCTC is not only planning to grow, but we've been growing really significantly since 2003. In fact, our full-time equivalent enrollment has grown by 40%. And that's during the same time when we've had, as the University of Louisville has had, 9 budget cuts. And so it is difficult to meet the demand, but we are working hard along those lines. One of the unique things about community colleges, and Barack Obama acknowledged that, is that we have a commitment to being the open doors to higher education, creating pathways of opportunity. And part of that, in fact, an essential component of that, is a commitment to keeping costs as low as possible. And in our state public policy structure for higher education, it's very purposeful that we have research one universities like the University of Louisville and the University of Kentucky, and then the comprehensive universities, and then the community colleges play that that front door to higher education role and work really, really hard. In fact, there are state policy limits on how high we can raise our tuition this year. The ceiling is 4%, and that will mean that there will be no more than a $5 per credit hour tuition increase. But all that's by design, and it's designed to try to keep ourselves accessible to a whole range of students, no matter what their challenges may be, including financial.
And you mentioned this a little bit, but can you handle that extra load of students, this extra responsibility of a community college now with the support you're getting from the state?
Well, it is a challenge. In the last 3 fall semesters, we've had to limit the number of brand new student applications that we've accepted because of the shortage of full-time faculty and facilities issues. So it is a challenge, but we've nonetheless been able to, so far to meet that. But it is a major concern. It's a concern that we're having to shift some of the burden of the costs to students, even though our costs overall are about two-thirds of that, the total cost of the public universities, and about one-third of that of the private institutions. It really is a challenge for us as well as our students.
What does it cost to go to JCTC?
Well, the credit hour cost is $130 per credit hour. So for a full-time student taking 30 credits a year, 2 full semesters, it's $3,900. And even though that is significantly less than other kinds of institutions, it's the highest tuition of any community colleges or community college system in all of our contiguous states. We've seen our tuition raise to double since 2001, and so we're very, very concerned about that. Now, the tuition increase rate has declined significantly in the last 3 years, and we've taken a number of steps, including a tuition guarantee program instituted this year that will keep a lid on, will prevent any tuition increases for students once they enter as a freshman, as they did this year, or they enroll this year. We can guarantee them that the same tuition will be available to them next year.
Michael Gritton with Kentuckiana Works. Kentuckiana Works sends people to school to get an education to help them get a better job. What do these tuition increases do for people who maybe have some education?
Well, think about what our core business is, working with adults who need to raise their skills in order to become competitive in the economy. And obviously, we give them tuition scholarships to go to places like University of Louisville or Jefferson Community and Technical College. And the lower tuition is, the farther we can stretch those dollars. But what's also interesting about this is what your first question asked something that we really have not debated very much in public policy in Kentucky, but we probably should. And that is, President Ramsey pointed out that over the last decade or so in Kentucky and across the country, we have been shifting the cost of college educations from sort of the public sector and all of us paying a little because it created some sort of good for the whole state. And we've been shifting it toward the person who's going to benefit the most from it, which is the student, right? And I used to think that that was just a bad thing overall. That can't be right. But I have to say, and again, I'm a little nervous sitting next to an economist, an economics professor, but the more I read from other economists, they argue a couple of important things. Number one, the return to a college degree is great. The economic return is greater than it's ever been. And the amount more that you make relative to a person with a high school degree is greater than it's ever been. The unemployment rate is 10% in our region, but it's only 4% for people with college degrees. So the U of L student that you heard from before doesn't have a whole lot to worry about if they get a degree from U of L in terms of finding a job in this market, right? The market is still very hungry for people with those kinds of skills. So there are reasons for economists to argue that the shift toward making the student pay for the education they're getting may make some sense because they will actually get the benefit from it. It's much harder to make that argument around the community college because, again, as President Newberry described, that's the open access place. If people can't go there, then they can't go anywhere. And so that's where we have to parse out, I think, this tuition argument about different kinds of institutions.
And we'll get back to that debate. We're going to take a break right now. When we come back, more with Michael Gritton, more with Dr. Tony Newberry and Dr. James Ramsey on the rising cost of education. We'd also like to hear from you. Call 502-814-8255, email news at wfpl.org. Find us on Facebook or tweet at WFPL News. You're listening to a news special from WFPL. And welcome back to a WFPL News special. I'm Gabe Bullard. We're talking with U of L President James Ramsey, JCTC President Tony Newberry, and Kentuckiana Works Executive Director Michael Gritton. Mr. Gritton, we were talking a little bit before the break about this, and we're getting into this almost philosophical governmental argument here mm-hmm. over where should the burden for public education lie? Certainly people who go to a college, a public university, they are a public community college. They will likely earn more money. They will have a better chance of finding a job. But then again, the community as a whole benefits from that as well. The city benefits from people paying a higher tax, mm-hmm. occupation tax, maybe somebody, you know, makes a lot of money, they live next door to me and they're improving their home, bringing up property tax values. There's any number of ramifications of this, but where should that burden go? We're seeing it shift more toward the student.
Well, let's think about just for a minute the challenge that someone like President Ramsey faces trying to run U of L, right? So he has only two sources of funding, really, right? One is state aid and the other is tuition. Right. And yet the state legislature has challenged him appropriately with becoming a premier metropolitan research institution. And he's well on the way to building that kind of institution, which is great. But ultimately, that costs money. And we can't kid ourselves about these things costing money, because for him to hire those research faculty, for him to build those buildings, for him to reduce class sizes, for him to provide more support so that students graduate at a higher level, all costs money. Right. What we've been voting for, both with our feet and with our votes, ultimately in the state legislature and in the people we elect governor, are people that are saying we don't have money at the state or we can't find it to put into that. There's no other reason why we would face 11 budget cuts in 11 years, right? Because, again, the economy was good for some of those 11 years. That's not just something that happened in the recession. That's been happening over and over and over again, right? So we face either two choices. Either we've got to, as a state, find a way to put more money into education and less other places, or we've got to let institutions like UK and U of L raise tuition and then hope to put more of the money back into the supports that allow low-income and middle-income students to go there. And I would argue that we should probably be doing both things. Think about the Keys money that President Ramsey mentioned a minute ago. That's a state program, right, that is merit-based. So what we're doing is taking scarce state tax dollars and using them to help people go to college based on how they do in high school, right? Now, if you had a world of unlimited resources, that's a wonderful and beautiful thing to do, because it's very nice for them to create incentives for people like my son to do well in high school so that he can get a discount going to U of L. But the economic question that we face, and as citizens, the philosophical question we face is, Is that the right way to spend scarce tax dollars? Or should we make sure those scarce tax dollars ensure that every low-income and middle-income student that needs help to get there can get there? And if my son can afford to go, then he pays the sticker price, even though most people don't. Those are big philosophical discussions, and I hope they come up in this year's governor's race as an example, because ultimately, if they don't come up as big issues, Gabe, what happens is we're making these decisions very quietly over a number of years, but we're staying in line with other states, right? And we're staying, but the problem is Kentucky is starting this race behind, and you can't stay in line with other states if you start behind and expect to win the race. Right. So at the state level, we've got to do something different in order to be able to change that economic picture, that educational picture. And it's the same for Louisville. You know, in college attainment rates, we lag behind most of our key competitors, which is why 55,000 Degrees and Mayor Fisher and others are making this big push around higher education. Right. But ultimately, in order to do that, we've got to do something different. We can't just do the same thing other people are doing.
And the question is, and anyone feel free to jump in here, has that extra support from the state, those scholarships, things that help students who may not come from the economic background of the wealthier students, the better off students, or those students who maybe could go to college, could do well in college, but didn't do well enough in high school to get the scholarship? Is that support there for them?
Gabe, let me just give you one number, and then I'll turn it over to the experts. The state, President Ramsey mentioned before, something called CAP money, which is one of the forms of aid that the state makes. My understanding is that for every dollar of aid that somebody qualifies for, there's another person who qualifies for it who doesn't get it. So essentially, for every dollar that we give out in aid, there's another person waiting in line who meets all the criteria who doesn't get it. Right. So, again, I'm challenging state leaders that we're going to have to do some things differently. We've got to find money to be able to fund people that qualify for that kind of aid, because otherwise you are slamming the door to people who qualify for educational aid and aren't getting it. That is unacceptable in a state like Kentucky. We've got to do better. Right.
Doctors Ramsey or Newberry?
Well, I would certainly agree that the CAP program needs to be enhanced. That's the primary state source of need-based aid. And what we find with community and technical college students, most of whom are working and have many pressures on their lives, they tend to apply, particularly as new students, too late to even be eligible for the CAP program, which has a very, very early deadline. At this juncture, we are blessed with the fact that we have a federal financial aid program, the Pell Grant program, that supports most students across the board who have need to be able to come to be able to make community college, community and technical college tuition at Jefferson. We have nearly 8,000 students out of the 15,000 who are eligible for Pell Grants. However, the CAP grants would be instrumental in helping bridging the gap between the for many students who just cannot afford to come on to school. We see literally hundreds of students every semester who are just on the verge of serious financial difficulties, a water pump going out, some kind of problem at the daycare, any number of problems, mostly financial, can just push a student over the edge and force them to drop out. So we need to give serious thought, we believe, at the state level to providing sustainable support for students.
And when those grants aren't there, the other option is loans, student loans. Student loan debt in the United States has surpassed $900 billion total. And we talked with University of Kentucky economics professor Ken Trosky about what happens when someone graduates with debt.
The average student walks out of college with about $24,000 in debt now. So it's equivalent to buying a car. And their debt payments are equivalent to buying a car. So, you know, if you think their interest rate's around 6.5% or so, they're going to be making payments of about $270 a month. So they need to take that into account. Is it going to hurt their ability to buy things, other things? Certainly. But this is clearly good debt because, again, you are borrowing. What it enables you to do is make a lot more money. I mean, if you sort of think about it, the difference over the lifetime, for example, in Kentucky, the difference over your lifetime between, you know, what you would earn as with a college degree on average and what you earn with a high school diplomas, once you take a lot of factors into account, is somewhere on the order of magnitude of $400,000 to $500,000. So essentially, if you're borrowing $24,000 to enable you to make a $500,000 return, on average. That seems like a pretty good borrowing. Now, it's risky. I mean, we've been talking about on average. So on average, it works out well. There's certainly students for whom it doesn't work out well. There's students who go to college and still don't perform very well in the market. There are concerns about students not understanding completely how much they're borrowing, in particular when they're going to schools that may offer a lower return, and in getting degrees that may offer a lower return. And so, I mean, there are certainly issues surrounding student debt. It's like any other financial transaction. The person undertaking the financial transaction should be aware of what needs to be aware of what they're doing. What are they committing themselves to, and what's the likely outcome? There are plenty of students who actually don't finish college and therefore aren't going to get the full return of a college degree. All of those factors need to be made clear when students are borrowing the money.
So we just heard that, and given that a lot of students don't have all of their education funded through grants or through scholarships or anything like that, is this the way that higher education is going in the country, that students in America can expect to graduate with several thousand dollars in debt?
Well, let me follow up. And what was just being said was what I was referring to when I said we need to look at education as an investment good, not a consumption good. How many of us would be able to buy with cash a home? We all want to own our own home. Home ownership is the American dream. And what do? We go out and we borrow money, and the theory for the borrowing is we're going to consume the benefits from that good over a long period of time, so it makes sense to pay the debt off over a long period of time. And that's what The Economist was just referring to, is education is an investment good and will pay a return, a dividend, over the an individual's lifetime. And it's a stark reality. None of us want prices to go up. And yes, the return would be more if the price were lower and you borrowed less. But the, as Michael said, the political reality is right now in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, for whatever set of reasons, according to the State Chamber of Commerce, the leaky bucket that is taking the resources away from not only higher education, but K-12 and all of education, is Medicaid corrections and the public pension, public employee pensions. And so those are the things that are consuming the resources that otherwise the state would be investing in K-12 and higher education. So I believe Michael's right. I think, the prices will continue to go up. We won't like it. And maybe the rate of return won't be as great as it otherwise would have been at a lower price. But it's still a good investment at this time.
And we have a call. Mike from Frankfurt has something to say on this issue. Hello, Mike.
Yes. My question is, what is a student getting at today's exorbitant tuition rates that I didn't get, that I was not getting when I graduated from the University of Kentucky back in 1976? When I could actually afford, the tuition rate was so low that I could just make it through school by working part-time. What are they getting today that we didn't get back?
They're getting, the world has changed a lot. I graduated in 1966, and we didn't have laptops, we didn't have computers, we didn't have any of the technology. So there have been a dramatic paradigm shifts in the delivery of education, the use of technology in education. Research has grown dramatically, and the opportunity to have those research experiences as undergraduates. So I really do believe that the product today is very, very different. It's much like healthcare. Healthcare cost, none of us like the increase in healthcare costs, but we like the fact that we now have cures for diseases. We're able to prevent diseases that we were not able to prevent before. We have cures for diseases that we didn't have cures for before. So I do think it's a very different product today in 2011 than it was certainly when I got my undergraduate degree or when I got my PhD.
What about for a student maybe that isn't taking advantage of some of these research opportunities, a student perhaps majoring in English, some other field where they're not going to take advantage of, or where the area hasn't quite been as improved under such a high profile?
Well, Gabe, I am an economist. I believe markets work, and we are providers at our institutions, and there is a market, and we have to provide what is demanded, and so all students are demanding wireless service across the campus. They're demanding the very best in teaching, the very best in technology. They're demanding academic support, advising support, career counseling support. They're demanding their demand for residence halls is very different than it was when I lived in a bunk bed and two beds in a room, and everyone's shower was down the hallway. So we're responding to the market, and so I think it really applies to all students, and that's what we're trying to provide is what the students are demanding.
I'd like to get some comments on this message that just came in through Twitter. Someone says, you're talking about an investment, and but the thing is, there's no return guaranteed on that investment. Mr. Gritton, Dr. Newberry, if you'd have a comment on that.
Well, it is true that there's no guaranteed return on the investment, but isn't that the case with most investments? What one does is to take a rational look at the value of, in this case, a degree in the marketplace. And what we know is the statistics are just extraordinary and much different than they would have been 20, 25, 30 years ago when I graduated from college. For example, an associate's degree means that unemployment among associate's degree holders in this economy is less than 6%. A bachelor's degree holders less than 3.5%. A master's degree 2.7%. And we've already talked about the income boost, the huge income boost that come with that. And again, those are averages. Not everybody who invests in a degree is going to avoid unemployment. Not everybody is going to have this quantum gain in lifetime income. But that is the clear direction, and those statistics are much stronger today than they were 20 years ago.
Is that an investment that you would make yourself if you had the opportunity to, for 6 years of your life even, and you know, graduating with, we've heard from students before this, graduates with anywhere from like $5,000 in debt up to over $100,000 in debt. With an uncertain job market, they're having trouble finding a job now, even years after graduating. Is that an investment any of you would make at this time?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Gabe, we've gone through the worst economic recession since the Great Depression. So we understand the business cycle. There's good years and there's bad years. And so, yes, it is harder right now to find a job than it would be at other times. But the labor market's coming back. The government just announced last month 244,000 new jobs added. But try to sell a house right now. And the time your house is going to stay on the market, or the value of your house, particularly across the United States in Nevada, Arizona, and Florida, and so forth, the value of that investment has gone down pretty significantly. So there are these times during the market when it is tough to go out and find a job, and it's harder. And skill sets change, and what the markets are looking for change pretty dramatically over time. But would I go back and get my undergraduate degree again? Did I want my daughters to get their undergraduate degree? Absolutely.
One thing we've seen happen in these economic times, and we heard a lot about it, I think, more in 2008 and 2009 than we did in 2010, is that people who lost their jobs maybe after a few years at a career were going back to school. They were getting a master's degree when they just had a bachelor's. Things like that, if they didn't have a degree, they were getting an associate's degree, things along those lines. What does that do for then the people who keep their jobs, who might have a bachelor's degree or an associate's degree? Is it decreasing the value of that investment they've already made? If somebody keeps their job, but then a coworker who lost their job comes back with a master's degree, the economy recovers years later, they're competing for the same job.
I don't think that's the right way to think about it, Gabe. I mean, if a person stays in their job, they're clearly adding to their skills in the job. But oftentimes what you find is people who lose a job and then go try to get another one realize there may be some addition to my skills that I need to add. And so I don't think that's the right way to think about it. I did want to go back to the caller who asked about a guaranteed return.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the son of a factory worker at Ford, so I understand the Louisville mentality and the Kentucky mentality, but I think the question implies that if I take this risk, I should have a guarantee at the end. And I think back when my dad was coming of age in the 60s and 70s, people more or less signed up at Ford and GE and Philip Morris and other places thinking they had signed up for lifetime employment and essentially had won a guarantee. But what we know about the economy is those guarantees didn't turn out to be true for everybody, and they certainly don't exist in today's economy now. So whether it's housing or stocks or other kinds of investments, you have to make rational decisions about those. The comments from Dr. Trosky at UK, I think, are right on. I worry at Kentuckiana Works that sometimes people are choosing expensive education programs that don't necessarily lead to jobs with high incomes. It's very common to run into people who get master's in social work, and I'm not trying to pick on that at all. They do wonderful, wonderful work, but they tend to think that because I'm getting a master's degree, I'm going to make the average of what people with master's degrees make, just as an example, and ultimately a lot of those jobs don't pay particularly well. So you have to be very much a rational consumer and pay attention to the choices you're making, but it's still the best investment you can make.
And along those lines, one of the things we've noticed in community college is a very strong trend. Some of our two-year occupational programs in the allied health and nursing areas, for example, or in engineering technology or information technology, 40 to 50, sometimes 60% of the students in those programs already have a bachelor's degree or even master's degrees. Last night, we had a great graduation at JCTC, more than 1,500 graduates this year. And among those graduates was our student speaker who has a master's degree from Columbia University. But because of the economy and some life choices, was making a career change. So one of the things that is great about community colleges and the complementary role that we play with the university system is that we can provide a lot of options as the economy shifts and the demands for certain skills and occupations shifts. Our institutions are able to provide opportunities for students as they make their way in what is admittedly a very tough economy.
Yeah, and I would say to follow up on both of those points, the stark reality is Kentucky's lost 100,000 manufacturing jobs over the last decade. And those have been good jobs and good paying jobs. And you could go to work at Ford or GE and have a great quality of life throughout your working career. We've lost all those jobs and they've gone to the low wage countries, and we've increased productivity, and that's resulted in some job loss. And certainly the economy has resulted in some manufacturing job loss. But the fact of the matter is the jobs of today are very different than the jobs of yesterday. And Gabe, we don't really even know what the jobs of tomorrow will be. And so investment in human capital is critical. And so, no, there's no guarantees. We all wish there were guarantees. There's no guarantees. But education, I really do believe, and human capital have become the most important inputs into the production process. So I think it's a rational investment. It's a good investment. If our tuition were lower, the rate of return would be even higher. But it's still, as Michael said, very much worth it.
And that brings us to our next break. When we come back, more with Dr. James Ramsey, Dr. Tony Newberry, and Michael Gritton on the rising cost of education. We also want to hear from you, 502-814-8255, or email news@wfpl.org. You're listening to a news special from WFPL. And welcome back to a WFPL News special. I'm Gabe Bullard. We're talking with University of Louisville President James Ramsey, Jefferson Community and Technical College President Tony Newberry, and Kentuckiana Works Executive Director Michael Gritton. We're talking about the rising cost of higher education, and we've heard from a few students we heard from one student. We also talked with University of Louisville student Preston Bates about this.
You have students who understand that in order to have a good institution, you have to continue to fund it. But at the same time, you have students like myself who work their way through school to go to school, and so it's bittersweet. I want my university to function, but at the same time, I want it to be affordable. So you know, and the fact that the state gives us less money every year, it's like, you know, we're functionally becoming a private school anyways. So you know, at some point, students feel like the university just needs to decide what it wants to be. Does it want to be a public metropolitan research university? Does it want to be specializing in, you know, graduate biological research? I feel like it can't be everything. It's serving too many masters, so it needs to decide.
On that topic, Dr. Ramsey, is there a disconnect here, or any of you feel free to jump in on this? We've talked about it. The economy is changing. The job market is changing. And education is changing. But are they all changing properly together?
Well, we've still got a lot of work to do in our state. As Michael knows, our per capita income in Kentucky is still considerably below the national average. We still have too many health care problems, too much childhood obesity, cancer, heart disease, and so forth. So that was the genesis of the Post-Secondary Education Reform Act in 1997. It said it's our responsibility in higher education to do something about these issues in Kentucky, and it's our job to do all that we can to increase economic opportunity and the quality of life. So as a result, the community college system was created. It was part of the University of Kentucky prior to 1997. The University of Louisville and University of Kentucky were designated to be the two research universities because of the importance of research, both from an economic development perspective and in terms of the creation of new knowledge that benefits healthcare and so forth. So I think we're not, well, I would emphatically say we're not where we want to be as a state, but I think we're more in alignment now as a result of the higher ed reform than we've ever been, and we're all pushing and trying to move in the same direction. But I say time and time again, mm-hmm. Gabe, we can't do what we're mandated to do at the University of Louisville if it isn't for the community college. And we're very fortunate to have Jefferson Community and Technical College. So because they do what they do, then we can try to do what we've been mandated to do.
But for you and Dr. Newberry, is the state dropping the ball here? They've mandated that certain things happen, but then the money isn't sure there to make them happen, and the burden shifts to the students.
Sure, they've been dropping the ball. There's no question about that.
Right, and at the same time, I think we would acknowledge that, particularly when you compare Kentucky's situation to states across the Union, I mean, there are a number of states, Illinois, Arizona, California, Texas, I could name seven or eight others where, as far as community college funding is concerned, the bottom has dropped out. So compared to those situations, ours has been maybe a death by dozens of strokes where in some other cases there has been severe limitations. So I think we appreciate the fact that Governor Beshear and the legislature tried to hold the line on cuts this time. The problem is that, you know, it's one cut after another, accumulation over a dozen years or so, and it makes it very, very tough.
And I want to agree mm-hmm. with Tony, absolutely. I think Governor Beshear and the General Assembly over the last several years have done everything they can to minimize the cuts. We're very fortunate compared with many, many other states. But as Tony said, it goes back to 2002 when we actually took the first cut. The recession at that time, national recession, was much deeper in Kentucky than it was nationally. And so it's been this cumulative effect, and we've just gone through the biggest recession. So that's the stark economic reality.
And we have Jason on the line with a comment on a similar topic here. Jason?
Hey, Gabe. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. First, there was an article in the New York Times back in September about how young couples are facing this as an issue whenever they are starting to get married, and that there are some couples, young couples, that are starting to assume each other's debts, which is very, very concerning to a lot of people. But what I wanted to talk about also is the idea that community colleges and universities need to be working with high schools in order to, first of all, educate the students about what they're going to be getting into financially, but also in order to cut the cost of a higher education. There are states across the country that allow high school students to come out of high school after being a senior with an associate's degree, thereby cutting their number of years that they're going to be in college in half, which therefore cuts the amount of that they're going to pay in college in half. For example, you can go to a community college in Lynchburg, Virginia, come out with an associate's degree in engineering, and walk straight into the University of Virginia and only have to pay 2 years of Virginia Tech and have 2 years of education before you have your degree, mm-hmm. a degree that is going to be applicable for what I think are going to be the jobs of the future. It's nice to hear Dr. Ramsey talk about those partnerships and how you all are working together, but it's nice to also hear these solutions or some solutions being discussed.
Right, Jason, let's hear from Dr. Newberry on this.
Well, you're exactly right. One of the great ways that you can reduce college costs and also get high school students on the path, early path to college going and success at the university is through high school partnerships. And even though we don't have programs that have quite reached the level as the one you described in Lynchburg, Virginia, where routinely high school students have an associate's degree when they graduate, we do have a very robust dual credit programs with 25 school districts in this region. In Jefferson County, we have more than 1,100 students who are currently high school students who are enrolled in college classes with Jefferson Community and Technical College, and we have one full-fledged early college program at Western High School, where once it's fully implemented 2 years from now, we'll have a number of seniors. The goal is that virtually every senior graduated from that high school would have the opportunity to have earned an associate's degree. So I think your question is right on target. That is one of the very significant ways that we can reduce costs for students, and we simply need to continue to develop those programs in our region.
And I would add, too, that one of the things that we're trying to do, we've still got a long ways to go, is to make sure that as our students come out of high school that they're ready to do college work, and that the less remedial education we have to do, again, it has the same impact of lessening the expense and the amount of time the students have to spend in school. So we're very committed as part of the 55,000 degree initiative that Michael mentioned. All of us in this room and others are committed to really doing all that we can to work with our teacher preparation programs and with the Jefferson County Public Schools in particular to develop those kinds of partnerships. The partnership that the caller mentioned is very unique, and I would like to learn more about it. But there are some things that we are doing to address that issue from a little bit different perspective.
And we've talked about what value a college education brings to a person, the difficulties and the damage that can do to a person's credit or buying power if they're in debt. But the shared benefit of having an educated populace, I don't think we've touched on here. And Michael Gritton, I'd like to ask you about this. Manufacturing has dropped off. Those jobs aren't here anymore. Maybe they won't be here in the future. But when the city is trying to attract a new company, isn't the fact that there are tens of thousands of people without college degrees or who have dropped out or left college for whatever reason, isn't that keeping businesses out of the area?
When you talk about trying to grow companies here, Gabe, or you talk about trying to attract them, particularly if you're trying to attract them to the region, what you hear from Eileen Pickett and Joe Reagan at GLI is that we tend to make the list of 10 cities that they're looking at, and we drop off the list when they're going to get to finalists. And we tend to drop off the list mainly because we don't have enough college-educated or associate degree-level talent. They look at the same census data that you cited at the beginning of this report. Lots and lots of adults with some college but no two-year or four-year degree. And that's part of why the 55,000 degrees is so intent on trying to help more people go back and get that. It will make us more competitive.
And one last comment here. We're almost out of time. Radha commented on Facebook to say she thinks it's interesting that schools can pay their presidents hundreds of thousands of dollars but have to raise tuition. Sounds a lot like Wall Street. Your guys' response to that?
I don't think there are any Wall Street style salaries around here, Jim.
I don't. I won't really respond.
Now, your salary is a matter of the public record.
Yeah, sure.
Can I say one thing about that, Gabe? Let me just jump in.
Mm-hmm.
Running these kinds of institutions are very, very, very big, complicated jobs. And I know something because it's public record about what both of these people make, and they're very fairly compensated based on what other college presidents who have their jobs do. So it becomes, if not a cheap shot, at least an unfair way to kind of think about this sort of thing. And to me, the fundamental thing is we've challenged these institutions to be quality institutions. They've only got two places to go for the money, the state or tuition. That's it. And if you want quality to go up, you have to pay for it. So no one likes that tuition is going up, right? But we have to have great leaders running these things. When you look around and see the development projects that the University of Louisville is touching, whether it's downtown, Shelbyhurst campus, Nucleus, the kind of miracles Dr. Ramsey is working with his team at University of Louisville amazes me every day. I'm thrilled they're doing it, and I'm happy to be paying them what he's paying them. So that's not our problem.
And there's not a day I don't think about going back to the faculty and making less money but being much happier.
All right, and we're going to have to leave it at that. I'd like to thank our guests, University of Louisville President James Ramsey, Jefferson Community and Technical College President Tony Newberry, and Kentuckiana Works Executive Director Michael Gritton. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
This is a WFPL News special. It was produced by the WFPL News staff, including Rick Howlett, Philip M. Bailey, and Dalton Main, and Graham Shelby. Our production staff is led by Laura Ellis and Brad Yost. I'm Gabe Bullard. For more information on this topic and for full audio of this show, you can visit WFPL.org. You can email comments to news@WFPL.org. You can comment us here at Louisville Public Media at 502-814-6500. You can even write to us, 619 South 4th Street, Louisville, Kentucky, 40202. Thank you very much.
Support for WFPL comes from Kentucky State Parks. Kentucky State Parks are ready for spring, complete with lodging, camping, fishing, boating, dining, and hundreds of miles of hiking trails. The Great Kentucky Outdoors is waiting at your Kentucky State Parks. More information about lodges, cottages, campgrounds, and monthly offers at parks.ky.gov. From Review Restaurant and Lounge, taking Louisville dining to a new level.